Hello, and welcome to the Evercore ISI 2020 webinar with Terry Childs, Head of GridLogic. Speaking today from Evercore ISI will be Energy Analyst James West. I'd like to remind everyone that the material in this webinar is based upon information considered to be reliable, but neither Evercore ISI nor its affiliates guarantee its completeness or accuracy. Assumptions, opinion, and recommendations contained herein are subject to change without notice. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. Material is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security, and we will not be disclosing any non-public information. Our speaker will be taking questions via the questions window on your webinar control panel. Please type your questions in at any time during the presentation, and now I'll turn the microphone over to James West.
Thanks, Emily, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our webinar with Terry Childs, the head of RigLogix at Westwood Global Energy Group. This is the next in our virtual energy industry leaders series, so thanks for joining us today. For those of you that may not know Terry or have run across Terry in his long career, Terry Childs has been the head of RigLogix, again, part of the Westwood Global Energy Group since 2018, and is responsible for the data quality and continued expansion and improvement of their product. Prior to this position, Terry used his 30-plus years in the industry to contribute to on- and offshore rig market intelligence offerings at companies like RigData, Joint Info, and RigZone. He's also managed negotiations of jack-up rig contracts and tracked planned and current field development projects at ODS Petrodata and INSCO. Terry received his degree in business administration from the University of Houston and Sam Houston State Universities. And Terry, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks, James. Appreciate you having me.
Well, seems like a lifetime ago that we last spoke, Terry. You know, since we did that podcast on January 15th, the industry's kind of done a complete 180. Can you recall a time when the offshore rig market has changed so dramatically and so quickly?
No, I really can't. I wish I would have been able to predict this, but as we were talking about a few minutes ago, you always qualify a presentation and say, well, assuming this and that and so forth. But I can't think of another down market that's happened this quickly. I mean, the last one we were in that we had just started to come out of that started in late 2014, you know, that even took into 2015 and 16, and it kind of went on for a few years. And I think back to some of the other ones, even all the way back to the mid 80s, 86, 87, and that one even took a little while to develop. So I'm not sure I've ever seen anything happen this quickly.
No doubt. We've tracked more than 25 rig contract cancellations over the past 2 months. And while some may have been an early release of rigs before contracts are ended, it seems to us there's probably a few more to come. So how do you compare the cancellation cycle so far to previous cycles? And, you know, is there an oil price or maybe an operating rig level where operators are just no longer incentivized to drop rigs?
Well, so I'll kind of give you a little bit of the data that we've collected so far. So I think we have 49 contracts that have either been outright terminated or, as you alluded to, suspended since basically mid-March. So, you know, that's certainly a high number in a month and a half. Now, in the 2014 down cycle, there were a large number of contract terminations back then. And now I'm talking more specifically just about jack-up semis and drill ships when I go through these numbers. But back in that period, if you look at 2015 through 2019, there were 175 contract terminations that took place in that period. So, you know, on the one hand, you say, well, we've still got quite a ways to go to reach that number. But when you look at the time it's taken, you know, God, if we stayed on this pace, we'd reach 175 pretty dang quickly. So it's certainly more severe in terms of the time it's taken, you know, not in the totals just yet, but obviously the other period was over a much longer period, but it's on pace right now to really do some big damage, similarly to that period. Now, do I think we'll get to 175? No, at least I hope not. If we do, then we're all in a lot more trouble than we think we are. But I just don't think we'll get there. Now, is there a level, an operating level, where operators aren't incentivized? I don't think there's a day rate that would incentivize necessarily operators to keep a rig. Now, that could, not to say it couldn't happen or that hasn't happened, but generally, if the market conditions are such, particularly with oil prices like they are now, I don't know that there is a day rate you could offer that would make an operator change their mind. I at least not one that any rig owner would be willing to offer anyway. So I think we're kind of at a point where, they're certainly interested in rate reductions. It just going to be a question of how much rig owners are willing to do that now. And I'll speak to that a little bit more later, but certainly that's a, day rates are obviously an important factor. And, but I think if an operator gets it in their head, they're going to drop a rig, then I don't know that the rate would really matter.
Understood. And Terry, maybe you could, well, we hadn't talked about this, but maybe you could describe for our listeners the difference in the contracts that were signed kind of pre-2014 versus the contracts that were signed, at the maybe long-term contracts at the bottom and kind of 16, 17 and the sanctity of those contracts.
Well, of course, in the pre-2014 period, more specifically, probably in the 2011, 2013 period, that was the time when, everybody was riding high and we were seeing the $500,000 and $600,000 floating rig rates and jackup rates that were in some cases over $200,000 a day, but well into the triple digits or over 100 anyway. So that was certainly, and they were long-term contracts. Everybody was bullish on what they thought was going to happen, oil prices, et cetera. So we reached that level. Then in the post 2014 period, and more specifically in the last few years, more so, that's when we saw the contract rates. Operating cost was sort of the norm in terms of for a floating rig and for jackups and what somebody would contract a rig for. So you're talking about a reduction of, say on average maybe $500,000 a day for a floating rig to $150,000 a day, and floating rig market becoming somewhat of a commodity market, in that there were rig owners really competing pretty hard for one and two well contracts for floating rigs, which generally you just tend to think of a floating rig contract being much longer term in nature. But so there was a material change in not just the day rates, but the type of contracts that these guys were having to bid on now. I mean, I can remember hearing stories from rig owners about trying to bid on a 30-day P&A with a semi or so, that just doesn't really compute when you're talking about floating rigs too well. So, and it was the same for jackups. But in the jackup fleet, there's a lot more, obviously, of the well-to-well type work. So that wasn't really a big deal then for that fleet. So it's been, certainly a roller coaster, and we finally saw the beginnings of some rig owners getting decent rates for their rigs, rates starting to move up, not by great amounts, but certainly enough that they were happy and with the direction everything was going. And so now that's back to, well, we don't know what it's back to. There really haven't been any new contract signings or rate revisions that have been made public yet. So it's kind of hard to say where they're going to go. I think we'll probably see, you could see in some instances as little as 10%, or I think as much as 25%, just depending on that particular rig contract, what the existing rate is, et cetera. But as I mentioned earlier, I don't know what the appetite is for rig owners to race to the bottom again. So, or if they'd even be willing to do that. So it'll be interesting to see.
Sure, no doubt. Well, the Chinese seem to be somewhat counter investing offshore. Is that a market that you envision could consume some excess supply, maybe particularly for some of the new builds that are still in Chinese yards?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've already shown that they don't have any problem in trying to push those rigs out of those yards down there. So they've formed the holding companies that they've created to sort of market those rigs, which really all it did was show the owner not being a shipyard anymore. It really didn't really have any other impact other than that. But they have been a big supplier of rigs for what contracts in the Middle East and Mexico, and then you've seen Coastal there in China take a number of those rigs as well. And that's something that I was told several years ago, was that the Chinese government eventually would just tell Coastal, look, you're going to take these rigs if and when we have this issue, and if you've got to get rid of some of your junk rigs, then that's what you'll do. But that was, I've been told that more on many more than one occasion, that that's what would end up happening. And they have taken some of them. But as we've seen, most of what's left there has been for bare boat charter type contracts. They haven't been selling the rigs necessarily or, getting rid of them that way. So it's not, while they've gotten quite a few of them out of the yards, if they're on these, 2-year bareboat charter or something, then it could, depending on what happens, what happens at 2 years. I mean, it could be a short-term fix, but they certainly haven't had any issue in trying to push those rigs out of the yards, and they'll continue to do that. There's no question about that. Now, that's obviously, I think, will slow down given the state of the market at the moment. But I don't think the rates they've been pushing to get for the bareboat charter rates anyway, I don't think they've been that much anyway. So,
right,
price wouldn't necessarily impact them maybe as much as it would, say, if they were coming out of Keppel Fells or somewhere in Singapore, perhaps. So maybe that would be a different rate structure anyway.
Okay, makes sense. And then how many FIDs are you guys anticipating for this year? I know that Technip FMC said 1 to 2 large greenfields are still a possibility, and several more mid-sized brownfields still economic in today's environment. I don't know if that they would say that again today, but they said it recently. What do you guys see for the FID situation for the rest of this year?
Yeah, so I had to go to our guys at we have two sort of new products, our Subsea Logics and Platform Logics, which all both deal with field developments and that sort of thing. I went to those guys. What we were showing at the beginning of this year, we were projecting something in the 60 to 65 range for FID approvals this year. I believe the list now that he sent me, it's down to 24. And that does include a couple of the things you were talking about, Sangomar, Shenandoah. There's still some on there that I guess could go either way, but 24 is the number that we have now on total FID. So, and I think that obviously will be adjusted as perhaps operator, CapEx adjustments come out, then probably that list will get adjusted. But sure. That's what we're showing at the moment anyway.
Okay. Well, I know we've seen a pickup in the adoption of kind of digital oilfield technologies accelerating, in this, or we envision digital accelerating in the post-COVID world. Which companies, which rig operators are ahead of the curve on this technology, on digital, first of all, and then what are other technologies that you see are most interesting right now?
Well, you know, I don't know enough about that side of it to know who's ahead of who, or if one would be more ahead of the others. I mean, we saw some of the developments in the past couple of years from, you know, Noble and Diamond and Transocean, and they've all come out with these new technologies. Now, in terms of the word digital, there's a couple of things that I could kind of speak to on that. I mean, in digital operations, one rig owner said, well, we're of course doing as much as we can to keep as few people on the rig as we have to in the post-COVID world anyway. They're certainly all coming up with the enhanced screening of crew going on and off the rig. They're doing things like having people sit on shore, you know, hiring subject matter experts to sit on shore and they watch different things going on several different rigs to try and look for little things happening that will identify predictive maintenance or you know, troubleshoot different things. So they're trying to increase those types of things where they can communicate with the rigs better, etc. Even to the point where when they're on the rigs, you know, I've been on a lot of those rigs, and some of those meeting rooms are not very big. So in a post-COVID world, when you don't want to cram a lot of people together in a room, it's even things like just enhancing the IT capability and for instance using Microsoft Teams or something just to keep a big group of people from having to cram together in a small meeting room. So in terms of digitally trying to just do little things like that to enhance the safety of the crew and in some cases, like I've mentioned, reduce the crew if in places where possible. Now, the other side of that coin, which by the way, I had one guy tell me that he thinks the offshore is well behind the land market in terms of this digitalization, and I don't really know what he meant, but it kind of surprised me. I would have thought the offshore would be right up there, but apparently the land is a little bit ahead of them. But some people seem to think that this COVID market won't really be a catalyst for expanding digital type initiatives in that, well, beyond what's taken place over the past few years, the contractors I mentioned, for instance. But and the reasoning behind that statement is, well, these things cost a lot of money. And so now we're in this reduced spending environment. So unless an operator is going to fund this, if it's for a specific drilling program and the operator funds it, well, they're not going to have the money to go and do all this digital enhancement and make all these expenditures and so forth. And then when you're talking about, well, the possibility of M&A activity and acquisitions and so forth, well, that could slow these things down. So there's some people are of that train of thought that this environment isn't really going to make them do anything along those lines. But so, you know, which way it goes, I'm not sure, but I think the technologies, you know, the Transocean one with, and I think you had the guy on from the Shear Ram company,
right. I mean, Bobby Gallagher. Yeah.
And they say that thing can shear anything and that it's really, really good. So I think you see a lot of, and not that's digital, but that's the kind of technological things that have happened that I think would continue more along those lines in you know, the hybrid rigs and that sort of thing, but digitally trying to reduce, you know, the crew interaction, I guess, for lack of a better term, as much as they can. I think that will probably continue in the post COVID, arena, at least until such time that they see that, well, okay, we're okay now, and maybe we can, you know, have a few more people meet in a room, and we don't have to put them all remote, or, you know, whatever it may be. So it's there's two schools of thought, and which way it'll go, I don't know, but it'll be interesting to watch, nevertheless.
No doubt about that. Well, how do you think the offshore rig market's going to look, post this downturn? How do we normalize here? And as we start to think about a recovery, which I know we're not at bottom yet, but do you think it'll be a typical recovery where shallow water comes back first?
Well, I mean, I would think so. That makes the most sense. I mean, obviously, when you're drilling in a jack-up program as opposed to floaters, it's certainly a cheaper operation. So one would think that would recover first. But I guess some of that depends on the specific program somebody's doing, what the urgency is with that well or that program, how important it is to get back to that. So I think it typically goes that way, and I don't see any reason for it not to happen that same way in this instance. There's no reason to think otherwise. So I think in terms of normalization, and I alluded to it earlier, you know, operators are looking for rate cuts, and there certainly will be some rate cuts, and maybe there won't be many, you know, lengthy contracts signed. Maybe the contracting will be of a shorter duration, so there won't be any issues with having to cancel or do anything like that. But the rates right now had just, as we talked about, had just started to come out of that operating cost level. So, to go back to that, that will possibly become the normal. Although I think there's only been two instances of rate adjustments that I know of for sure. One is for some options that haven't even been done yet. I know what that rate will be if and when they do it. And the other one's for a jackup in the Gulf of Mexico that came about. It was just on a P&A program, and it came about due to an offer from a lift boat company. And so the rig owner kind of had to match the pay rate. So it really had nothing to do with oil prices or COVID-19 or anything right. else. So I think maybe a 10 to 25%, depending on on the rate, on the specific contract that you're talking about. As I mentioned, I think will be probably the norm, and I think we'll get settled in, and hopefully once travel resumes and we start using some of this oil that seems to be floating around stored up, and we can get a little bit of an oil price increase, you know, then maybe you see some rate movement back up. But it's going to be like starting over in some cases, although I don't know that as a whole, I don't know that rates will go down quite as far as they did before. They will for some, but I don't think as a fleet that we'll see quite the amount of lowering that we saw before.
Well, I certainly hope you're right about that. We are going to see restructurings. We Diamond Offshore filed on Sunday. There'll be more that are likely to file for bankruptcy protection. How many rig contractors do you think there's going to be after this shakeout?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because you think, well, there has to be some consolidation, and there no doubt will be. But then if you start looking around, you say, okay, well, what contractor has the financial wherewithal to buy another contractor? And all of a sudden your list gets really, really short in that instance. So particularly if you're talking about cash. And so you know, if you want to put together some deal that's done on some sort of equity swap and, you know, whatever, all of that sort of thing, then okay, I suppose that could happen. But I don't know that it's going to be this mass consolidation that a lot of people speak to, just because I don't know that anybody has the capacity to do that at the moment. So not to say that there can't be some creative accounting, because Lord knows we've seen that before. So I think versus M&A activity, I think what we should be looking at in the near term is getting the rig supply straightened out. I think that should be more of a focus than who's going to buy who. I mean, there's certainly been a list of companies that have been mentioned for the last several years, and now with what's happened to some of these others, they've suddenly gotten on the list as well, in terms of being a candidate, ones that you necessarily wouldn't think would be a purchase candidate, but would be a buying, or, you know, a candidate to buy somebody. Now they're mentioned in that same breath. So, you know, taking care of the supply, I think, is the main thing. And so, I know a lot of rig owners, they haven't liked to retire a lot of rigs at one time, just because of the impairment hits and so forth. But as one guy put to me last week, he said, well, if our stock's price is $1.65, what difference does it make if we take a hit, you know, at that point? So, and okay, well, I guess if it goes down another 8 cents, well, so what, you know, was kind of the attitude. But I think this may possibly might be the point that's pushing these rig owners to take care of that quicker than maybe they would have otherwise. So I think that's what the focus will be coming out of this, more so than acquisitions. But that will happen ultimately. It's just a question of when, of course. So does it get down to two companies? I don't know. Maybe it does eventually. But I don't think any scenario like that would unfold anytime in the near future, for sure.
Sure. Fair point there. What about the offshore service providers, the equipment providers? They're in much better shape financially. Some of them are still generating positive free cash flow. How do you think they fare during this downturn?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really follow that side of the business, so I don't know a lot about it. I did speak to some of our guys in the UK and asked them about what we were looking at in terms of EPC and contract awards and so forth. And we've certainly come down from, you know, maybe 65 to 70 billion originally forecast this year to maybe 25 billion. I'm talking about things like subsea trees, you know, platforms, pipelines, FPS, right, that are some of that. I know there's a lot of other things, but in that particular arena. So I think what we're kind of seeing for that side of the business in general is obviously a decline this year, a decline in 21 over what we had initially predicted. And we think probably in 2023 is when it really will, that spending will surpass what we projected originally. So possibly, you know, perhaps the latter half of 2022, but that's kind of the timing on what we see for that market to get back to the growth that we were kind of projecting at the start of the year.
Okay. Now, have you guys, I'm sure you have, but do you have a new forecast for the rig market for for a normalized environment, but also for 2021, which I think the active rig count will be?
Well, yes and no. It's, you know, it's, it seems like we have to run these numbers every week now with with all of the contract adjustments that are going on. I'm hesitant to throw a number out there just because it's so rapidly changing. And plus, we're trying to sort of look at the factors that we're using and sort of say, well, is there something we should be considering or something we're considering that we're not, that we shouldn't be, you know, given sort of the parts of this that are new and or that haven't happened before, I guess I should say. I think in general, you know, clearly we're going to see, like everybody, there's going to be a decline this year. I think now I have spoken to some who believe that next year could be very good. The reasoning being, well, look, all of this work's getting pushed into 2021. Everything's being deferred to next year. So, and again, but this is where the set of assumptions come in, assuming travel returns to normal and assuming that we get some improvement in oil prices, then the sentiment seems to be, well, with that means there's going to be a lot of demand pent up, and so we could see quite a bit of rig demand next year. I don't necessarily disagree with that. On the flip side of that, we've kind of heard that same story the last 3 years. Well, yeah, we think next year is going to be the year. So, you know, on the one hand, it sounds perfectly legitimate. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. I mean, when I look at what we're projecting at the moment, I think we've got, you know, marketed. I think this actually also will make the, you know, there's always two ways to look at it, total fleet and marketed fleet, and generally marketed fleet, i.e. not including cold stacked rigs, is generally the more preferred fleet that one looks at, because that's the rigs that impact, right, that are being bid, et cetera. So, you know, when you go to start factoring in maybe a little bit higher attrition rate, and then you have to try and decide, well, what do I do with options? Because there's been a lot of options. That's the other half of the, you know, contract cancellation story, is the number of options not being exercised. So that's probably as much having as much of an impact as the actual cancellation. So, you know, do you include options or exclude options? But I don't see at this juncture a great big utilization jump next year, at least in the first half of the year. I think maybe in the second half we might see something start to improve. But operators, they've certainly reacted quickly with all these events that have happened in terms of the contract changes and so forth, but they don't seem to be quite as fast when it comes to going back. And I think they need to see some, at least they've got to have the perception that, okay, things are stable and we can go back now. So I think you've always got that lag to deal with. So I think it's probably second half of next year. And do we see utilization, you know, as you well know, in the marketed fleets had reached close to or just over 80%, I think, for pretty much all three of those major rig types. So clearly that's, I think we're looking probably low to mid 70s by the end of this year, and probably staying flat that way, possibly even going down a little bit first half of 21 before maybe coming back up the second half of the year. And hopefully by that point, we will have had a somewhat prolonged period of sort of normalization, and then we can kind of start once again that road sort of back to recovery, or better recovery, I guess.
Okay. Well, Terry, why don't we maybe hop around to the major basins, and hopefully you can give us an update on what you're seeing in those markets, and we could start with the Gulf of Mexico and kind of trends and activity levels that you're expecting.
Well, you know, I wrote an article about the Gulf of Mexico drill ship market back in might have even been late 2019 or January, I can't remember which, and it was talking about how well positioned that market was, that there was only a couple of drill ships that had any idle time coming during the year, and there were some requirements out there and some tenders, and it looked pretty good, and rates were cut. Well, now it's a different story. Now there's already, I think, two idle ships and probably some more on the way. And I think Diamond had the one contract suspended, although it's staying on contract. So, you know, this market's changed. It doesn't really look all that great at present. There's really only one tender out right now. Now, it's a big tender. It's probably 10 wells and 5 options and probably a year's worth of work, at least. That bid is due back in, I think, a week from Friday. But you're going to have probably, and it starts maybe first quarter 21, you're probably going to have 8 rigs bidding on this one contract. And so that's something that earlier in the year, I can remember all of this, there were a handful of contracts, and it was who's going to get this one, and that's going to dictate who gets the other one, and blah blah blah, and the market was so tight, it was crazy. And now you'll have, you know, maybe as many as 7 or 8 rigs that could very easily be available by the time this job starts or later in the year. So certainly a change of fortune, so to speak. You know, the semis, there's only, right, I think, 2 or 3 working anyway, so not a lot of activity there. Jackups even worse. There's only 2 jackups working at the moment. Should go back to 3, but I don't see the jackup market here being more than a 4 to 6 working rig fleet, you know, for the,
right,
pretty much the ongoing future. They're just not that much, and there'd be another jackup leaving in a few months anyway, so it's just not that much of that left here anymore. So not a great market outside of probably the deep water arena, which makes sense, I suppose, but that's where the future is here for sure.
Okay. Well, what about the North Sea? I know the at least the Norwegian sector came back really strong this cycle. UK sector had improved, but not as much as the Norwegian sector. What are you seeing there?
Well, I think Norway still is kind of in that position, in that I don't think they've been hit quite as hard as the UK. As it relates to, you know, contract cancellations and so forth. There's certainly operators there that are deferring programs and whatnot, but and maybe pushing out FID declarations. But I don't think the cancellation there has been anywhere near as bad in that country versus the UK. So, and within the UK, jackup cancellations there have outnumbered semis by 3 to 1, from what my colleague there tells me. But of course, you've got a lot more jackups contracted, so I don't know that that's any kind of trend or anything, but that seems to be where the most of the cancellations there have been. It's kind of been like the Gulf of Mexico and sort of like Brazil, I think, in that you've got the labor markets there that are pretty much homegrown. So I don't think it's the regions that we're going to get to. I think that where you've seen more of a disruption, and that I think a lot of that has to do with the amount of foreign workers to that, to those regions that that are, that they depend on mm-hmm. so much. But I don't think the North Sea has been quite as bad, although there have been a fair number of contract cancellations. But I think that market will bounce back okay. And I you know, I think you'll see well, I don't think you'll see jackup or semi market utilization much over 50% the rest of the year, particularly in the UK. But I think Norway, it'll stay in the 70-80% for the semi fleet. And so that market should, I think, particularly within the semi, the floating rig side should recover probably. That may be one back and back to your question of jackups going first, that may be different. This may be one region where that would be reversed, but shouldn't be quite as bad for this region, I don't think, coming back.
Okay. How are you thinking about Asia Pacific?
Well, so that region, they've had a fair number of contract terminations or suspensions. I think 10 of them. Only now, some of these, of course, that have been suspended, they'll restart at some point. The contracts are still intact, maybe at a standby rate or whatever. And but I think here only 2 of the 10 that we know for sure will restart with the same, with the existing contract resuming. So, we've seen some reports that Petronas Carigali had shut down all of its rigs, and they did have some downtime in regards to just travel restrictions in certain countries and getting crew in and out, and maybe had a couple of rigs shut down for a few weeks. But by and large, most of those contracts have remained in place. Now, we're hearing that Vietnam and maybe one or two other countries are starting to sort of ease their travel restrictions a bit. So I think that obviously will help if they can start getting crew in and out. And this is one of the regions, APAC, Africa, Middle East, where there's all a pretty fair number of foreign workers that they got to get in and out, not to mention equipment and so forth, getting equipment in. So, operators there, like everywhere else, they're seeking rate reductions. But again, there's jackup rates, for instance, in that region aren't really all that great to begin with. I mean, there had been a couple of really nice ones, but the bulk of rates over there are still sort of mid-70s and just not a lot of room for them to drop that much. So I think you'll see, obviously, some, for instance, the Malaysian contractors, I think they'll be certainly more taken care of than necessarily other contractors, and maybe the same in Vietnam and so forth. But, they've had the cancellations, but there's still plenty of demand there. So I think they should come back. And like I say, I don't think the rate structure is high enough that they would rates would suffer all that much outside of perhaps Australia. But other than that,
right,
shouldn't be too bad.
Okay, well, maybe if we move over to West Africa, I know there were a lot of campaigns that were scheduled. Many that started yet, so probably they've been pushed out at this point. So what are you seeing there?
Yeah, that's Africa's probably been the hardest hit of any region, and that I think they've had 12 of those 49 I talked about contracts there have been terminated. I think we only have 3 of those that'll recommence at some point when either probably travel, I think, had a lot to do with a lot of these terminations here. And this is one of the regions where there's a very heavy reliance on the foreign rig worker. So I think that was particularly a harsh impact in this region. So, and the same with getting equipment in and out, as I mentioned. But I just don't think the outlook, as you mentioned, there's been programs canceled. I don't think the rest of this year is really all that great the outlook. I mean, I think you'll see jackup utilization likely fall probably to below 50%. And I think it had gotten up to maybe over 80, I want to say, in that market. So yeah, 83% in January 2020. So we're projecting that to go down below 50 into the 40%, 40s this year. And I think the floating rig utilization is going to be even worse. I think that's probably going to be under 40%. Now that's a little misleading on the floaters, because you have to factor in Las Palmas, and that's a major stacking area. So you get an inordinate number of rigs obviously there that aren't working, but yet they're still marketed. So it kind of artificially deflates that number as well, but still not going to be great. But like you said, with these programs being deferred, there's still well over 100 different requirements there that we have as outstanding in one form or another, be it just still a prospect or in active tender. So the demand is still there. I mean, it certainly hasn't gone away. It's just kind of like Asia Pacific. It's really more when than if, but there's certainly still the need. So I think it will recover. It may take a little bit longer than some of these other regions.
Sure, fair enough. And then what about what are you seeing in the Middle East? I mean, I think Saudi's still kind of pushing forward, but others probably delaying.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's been quite a I mean, operators there are asking everybody for rate cuts. I've heard Saudi Aramco's likely to drop 6 to 9 jackups is kind of the numbers that I've heard. Haven't heard much about ADNOC in terms of canceling things. I know they have canceled a few, but haven't really heard much that a lot else is going to happen. So I asked somebody with the Saudi thing. I said, well, do you think they're going to look for the high day rate contracts, or maybe get rid of some of the older rigs that, because they've got, you know, they've kind of taken over as the old jackup capital, where they're still employing quite a few of those. And I was told, well, they'll go for the high day rate rigs. So of course you would expect ARO would be okay in that situation, but it appears from everything I've heard, it appears to mainly be rate cuts that's going on over there, and just a few cancellations. Okay. But you would expect that region would be, with the way it's performed relative to other jackup markets, that it would be a little less impacted in this instance as well. I think there a lot of operators, you know, costs over there, finding costs are very low. So they seem to be able to take that hit, this oil price hit, better or easier or whatever word you want to use. But so I don't think they'll probably be one of the first ones to kind of quote unquote come back, I would say.
Okay, well, maybe we'll wrap up our world tour here with Brazil.
Well, so Brazil is kind of, as far as I know, somewhat like the Gulf of Mexico and North Sea. I think I know there's at least one rig owner that said all of our rigs are working there. There's no downtime. I've checked with a couple other rig owners, and aside from Total, Brazil, with the Valaris ship, I don't think there's been any other contract cancellations that have taken place there. We've heard about Petrobras deferring a couple of moored floater tenders and so forth, and you'll see things like that. But on the other hand, we saw you know, the contract award from ExxonMobil to Seadrill that had been ongoing for quite a while. So, but you know, that's one of what I think only 7 rig contract awards since that have in the world, right, since mid March, maybe. So, So I don't think that region's doing too bad. I think we had the Maersk semi canceled in Trinidad and the Sam Croft there in Guyana. And I think that's really about all that's taken place in that whole region in terms of contract cancellations. So yeah, things may end up getting deferred, but again, this is another region that I don't think will actually end up being just terribly bad. It seems like a lot of these cancellations, if they were going to take place, they would have taken place. And then not to say there won't be more, because there will be, but I think we took that initial hit, and now it'll be just kind of a little less frequent at this point. But still things, some of those happening from time to time, but I don't think this region will be one of those places.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, maybe last one for me, Terry, and I'll let you go. I know I've eaten up a lot of your time today. Is there anything that Rig Logix is doing as a company to adjust to this, the downturn and the new environment that we're in?
Well, product-wise, not specifically. I mean, we've redone our Rig Logix platform and modernized it and added some new features that we didn't have before. And our ultimate goal is to link different databases together. So in other words, you don't have to, when you log into Westwood, you're logging in to one spot and then you're just kind of going to where you need to go. And plus, all this data is so interconnected, like with rig requirements and then exploration wells and licensing and so forth. And so it's all trying to get it all in one place, so to speak, to where you can see it, whatever facet you're looking for, a lot easier. But in terms of anything else, it's in a bad market, as you well know. The market participants are certainly less forthcoming with data that they might otherwise want to disclose in a good market. So it makes it more challenging in terms of trying to ascertain that some particular information. But so trying to really put a focus on trying to just keep up with all this stuff, that alone is hard enough. So but we're trying to enhance a few things and connect a few things and make it easier for the end user in the long run. But until then, we'll just keep doing what we do and trying to sort out all this mess.
Gotcha. Well, Terry, look, wonderful having you on today. Certainly a lot different conversation than we had back in January, yeah. But yeah, it is what it is. In there.
Hopefully, if we have another one, yeah, it'll be better. So
that's the plan. Sounds good. Well, Terry, I appreciate you coming on today, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, James.
You got it.